Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really excited. I just met two people that I know you're going to find interesting. They are Lisa Hensley and Ted Keelan, and they're from Springfield, Illinois. And we just met here at the Rainbow Gathering, a national rainbow gathering in Idaho, up, 6,000 feet in the mountains or something, and where we're living in tents.
Yes, at least 6,000 feet up, maybe closer to 7,000. It's great, though, up here. Beautiful.
Really is. And I don't know if people know what rainbow gatherings are. It seems to me a lot of people don't know that, but it's been going on since 1972, sort of, you call it a hippie gathering about peace in the world and living lightly on the planet, although even when so many people come to a place, it's got to have impact, and that's making me even more sensitive to the impact that we have on the planet just by walking around on it, basically.
Right. Right. It's amazing when you see so many people and you do worry about impact in a place like this, and you have people who are very concerned about it here, and yet it really lets you see that we are having a huge impact on the earth just for the fact that we're having to be so careful about the salmon in the streams here, and that thousands of people are staying out of the streams even though it's hot and they look very inviting right now.
That's really true. And if you're hearing music coming on the background of the show here, that's because we are sitting surrounded by many tents and meadows, different musical groups playing, kids running around, all kinds of different things, food being cooked in different kitchens that have different themes. And we today had a meeting at the Rainbow Action Collective, which is what they call a kitchen. And it has a counter made out of bamboo where I put my in San Francisco indie media flyers, and we had a meeting, and that's how we met. Now we probably need to even say what the indie media is, because we have to assume every time that listeners don't really know. So, Ted, do you want to explain what the indie media is?
Well, in my estimation, it's something that began as a sort of infrastructure that grew out of the need to inform people the time exactly when the WTO was meeting in Seattle in 1999.
The World Trade Organization, that is.
And they wanted to stop the meeting as a sort of show of resistance. And in order to do that, they had to get as many people there as possible. And I guess once the infrastructure was built, everyone said, wow, we could do this again. And I don't know exactly when it began, but the Independent Media Center. And it branched out all over the world now.
Right. Well, I know exactly when it began because I was there, and it was the first time that in Seattle in the anti-World Trade Organization meetings, the protests against that organization, was the first time that consciously it was put together places for people to come and work together from independent media that showed up from all over the world. And when you say media, that includes audio, video, photography, print. So it's on the internet now. It's a global movement on the internet, and you can go to indymedia, indymedia.org, and there's like 50 of them. And if you start there, you'll know what we're talking about, and we really urge you to do that. So you folks are media activists also. You're involved in cable access TV. You have a show called Blowing the Whistle?
Yes, Blowing the Whistle. On every Wednesday night at 6:30 on Access 4, yes.
That's a great name. And you also have a radio show on the internet, is it?
Well, it's on WQNA at 88.3 FM locally in our town, but it's also on Channel 18 and 22 cable locally, And WQNA.org, there's a Real Player stream there that you can pick up 24 hours a day. So you could get it anywhere in the world because of that.
Yeah.
And that some of those guys are shortwave, too. Like you were saying, you had some shortwave going on. And they were, at the last IMC meeting, were planning a big media, you know, shortwave, FM, doing everything at one night and all talking for 3 hours about what this is. And then we're going to put it up, videotape it and put it out. And it's our first production experience as a group. And there was talk of, well, is shortwave viable, you know? I mean, who's listening to that, you know? And but a lot of the people and all the media people locally came together in our group who are already working in media and sort of like see it as a club where they can share, pool their resources. And that is so valuable, I think. Just in so far what's happened would be valuable if it even stopped the connections that were already made.
Absolutely. And yeah, so it's a first to have the media connected in here. To have the indie media is really new, and to have it connected in to a rainbow gathering is also really, really new. So that's very positive, and it's great. And we see that the alternative media, making our own media, covering our own stories. Just to start out, of course, the stories about rainbow gatherings are often extremely distorted, and.
Oh, yes. I read one on the board, the information board, and it was just terrible. Instead of saying that latrines were being dug, which no one would have a problem, that's a good thing, instead they were referred to as raw pits of sewage, raw holes of raw sewage. So it's all a matter of the spin that the media often puts on things. You can do something that's just fine, or what any Boy Scout manual would tell you to do out in the woods, but the media, if they don't like you, they can make it look like you're doing something very bad.
That certainly is true. And you folks are in Springfield, Illinois, and you're getting an indie media website yourself, because this is all so far on the internet, although it can be taken down and played and copied on tape and put on discs or whatever you want to do. It's totally open publishing, so anybody can upload anything and anybody can download anything, or you can just read it in the comfort of your home. Read it, listen to it, watch it. So what's happening with Springfield in the media?
Well, as Ted was saying, we have this large production planned, which we'll be discussing indie media, and we hope to have it recorded and indeed put it on the internet, but as well it will be on cable access, it will be on the radio, it will be on shortwave, multiple ways to access it. Be able to replay it again over and over so that lots of people have that chance. We've been working on getting our own physical space and getting our application in, dotting our I's and crossing our T's, so to speak, to really bring people together. But we have a lot of radio people, we have a lot of journalists, and a lot of video people who are really involved in Springfield. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that's great, and Springfield's not even though it's the capital of the state of Illinois, it's not a very big city, is it?
Less than 200,000 people, yes.
And it's also the home of the first, what do you call them, the head, not the head, the...
They call them the pioneer.
Pioneer
of microwatt broadcasting in Bonnet and Taco. And what started off as WTRA, Tenants' Rights Association, was Black Magic Radio, Zoom Black Magic Radio, African Liberation Radio, and then Human Rights Radio was the last name, I think, over a span of 13 years of... resistance against the FCC, and recently he was taken down, so he started back at a low wattage now. He goes back on the air every time, though.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know what the micro-radio movement is, it has become a movement in the last 13 years, although there have been pirate radio stations around for a long time. People have just gotten together in a more concerted way of resisting against the fact that are no licenses available for stations under 100 watts. That's been going through a lot of changes lately due to the fact that there's a movement, actually. There's a movement pro and a movement against. It's a very, actually, an amazingly hot political issue, considering we're talking about teeny-weeny little radio stations. Do you want to add anything to that, either of you?
Well, I would just say that, yeah, what's really been sad about with all the LPFM is really you're encouraging more unlicensed stations by the fact that these rules have been made more restrictive, with the third adjacent being moved to second adjacent. And now
that's how much space you have to leave in between radio
and
the dial.
And that's made it very difficult for cities, even the size of Decatur, which is only 80,000 people, Springfield less than 200,000. There are just no spots left on the dial. So all those applications that went in are no good. And so MicroWatt is really all you're left with. The only people in Illinois who are qualifying for the LPFM licenses are in very, very small towns. Nothing that
They're
someone could
remote.
Use from an inner city community. From an inner city community or something, nothing that would really, you know, you'll be broadcasting to, you know, farmers and small communities, nothing that's, I don't think that's going to be very activist oriented, at least in Illinois, that's going to come out of LPFM stations, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the reason that this is happening is because National Public Radio and the corporate media, I like to say this about National Public Radio, because people often put, I also work with KPFA at Pacifica Station, and they also often lump public, all these things together, including National Public Radio. But in these, National Public Radio has been on exactly the wrong side in the matter of opening up these small radio stations, which are very cheap and easy, and there really is enough room on the dial for a lot more than there are. National Public Radio has been one of the leaders in the fight to stop that from happening. Do you hear about that? Do you think people know much about these issues down where you live in Springfield, Illinois?
Well, a Media Activist Coalition is a group that formed directly to fight the local public radio affiliate, NPR affiliate, that's actually, it's called WUIS. It's on the campus of UIS. It was on the campus of Sangamon State before the merger. And although it used to be a student station, it's not anymore at all. Students have absolutely no access to it, to the programming. They say that if you submitted something, there's a chance they might put it on, but it, you know, they, no one's ever really gotten anything on that I know of. It's certainly not an easy process. It's not public by any means. And so there's a group that's been, they've showed up. We were involved in taping. I went and taped a protest outside of one of their fundraisers that occurred where they were, you know, the station manager, Brad Swanson, came to it, and he came out and discussed the matter out there in a freezing cold. And they were saying, why aren't Hispanics represented? Why aren't the, why isn't the, you know, the African-American community represented? Why isn't the local community represented, you know? I mean, if you're on the campus, you're receiving some kind of benefit, and then the campus can't partake. You know, what is that all about? Why are we carrying this station? Mm-hmm. You know, so...
Yeah, well, there's really a clamp down. There used to be lots of little small town stations, not all that long ago. I mean, there's just less and less possibilities, which makes it more and more important for us to open things up, us, all of us. I'm interested to know what you do, what kinds of issues you cover. You talk some about on Blowing the Whistle, your cable access TV station. What kinds of things do you deal with?
Well, we like to combine activism with a little bit of entertainment. When people go out and do a lot of free concerts in our town, there's a lot of free musical events. We love to cover those because we so appreciate people trying to give back to their community. And we hope that that will then draw people in when we become issue-oriented. For example, the police really harassed the kids in our town a couple of years back. They really started a fight and tried to make it seem like some sort of a racial fight outside of a local teen club, and the police were really waylaying on these kids. And of course it was reported in the news quite the other way around, that the kids were causing the problem. And we were able to obtain videotape from the actual night, from some surveillance video from a Handy Pantry convenience store, which shows young girls who've been maced by the police coming in. It shows we had actual eyewitnesses to the event who were knocked around by the police, and other people who didn't know them, who just happened to see it, who could back up those stories. So it was a very strong piece, and that was one particularly scary story that I remember. But we've covered lots of other community events as well. A lot of environmental issues come up on our show as well, because we really suffer from urban sprawl. There's really no good plan in the way that our city planning occurs, and so it's just becoming, we're in a very rich farming area, and a lot of prime farmland is just being turned into west side urban sprawl in Springfield. And also our natural areas, they've tried to put an awful winter light show right up against a natural area in Springfield, and a lot of us came together to fight that, and we really put that on the show and pushed it. And the light show did not go. People did not come, and we successfully ended what would have been a 5-year contract, which would have been very detrimental to the area.
Mm-hmm. Always great to hear success stories. That's for sure. You know, I wanted to just circle back a little bit to what you said about Ambana Cantaco's radio show earlier in the day. When we first met, you said that police brutality went way down when his show was on the air. And I'm thinking about you're talking about your own issue of covering that police brutality. Can you say any more about that, Ted? Did I just say it?
Well, not how he did it was interesting. He would hear about it, you know, through the grapevine in the projects. So-and-so, they took him down, and he's down, because they would take him to hospital routinely, beat him up, take him to hospital, take him to jail.
The police would beat him up.
Right, and so to the point they had to go to the hospital first, you know, that's what we're talking about. And so he would cut them off at the hospital. He'd be there, find out what room they were in, go up with a little tape recorder like this, and ask them what was going on. 15 minutes later, have it on the air, and the rest of the projects would be tuning into the radio, listening to it. So the police found it harder and harder to get away with it without it just being so well known and so well publicized, and he's always on the money with it. I don't know what the statistics are, but I mean, you heard a lot of people upset about the fact that it would happen so often, and then you didn't hear about it so much. So everyone's assuming that it curbed it or that it had a positive effect. Certainly, the police are under gag order not to talk about him to anybody. They have one guy, the PR guy, that will talk about him. Other than that, the police don't want to talk about it. And, you know, if you try to ask them what they think of it or something, you know, they can't talk to you about it at all. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, says that, well, they have to realize that that's a danger. If they're doing things that are illegal, you know, and somebody's watching them. But that's what inspired me. So regardless of what other things he says on his show, I was inspired by the mechanics of the situation. He used this technology to draw the light on these guys, and they responded by backing off and for 13 years. And that I include in that the fact that he didn't get busted for so long. You know, they were afraid, I guess, to go in there and make a big scene, you know.
They being the police or the
police, the SWAT teams. They finally sent a type of FCC SWAT team in to shut him down. And they took all his equipment. They weren't violent, except in the sense that they were breaking into his place and taking all his equipment, you know.
Well, I want to underline what you just said, because I want people to really understand that we're talking about a SWAT team. That's like mm-hmm. special forces
boots.
Going with boots yeah. and locking down doors and going into somebody's house because they're doing a radio station, mm-hmm. folks, a little teeny weeny radio station. This is not, you know, like killing millions of people or anything like that. So what happened with the case that you were just talking about, Lisa, that you did with around police brutality? Did anything happen with that was, or do you know, did you follow that up?
Well, we certainly haven't had any repeat episodes of that in Springfield, thankfully. I don't know if it had any direct impact. It certainly was a controversial show, and we heard you know, a lot of people speaking of it. I think a lot of people weren't really taking the police side, and I will tell, Ted did a really wonderful thing. He went to the TV station that had the Handy Pantry surveillance video, and they thought he was from the Handy Pantry, so they just handed the tape over to him, so we were able to use it. So sometimes, you know, you have to use the clandestine measures to be able to get to your to get to the sources. Mm-hmm. But when we got it out there, it was just the people who saw it were really, I think, really appalled by the macing. I saw a lot of public outrage, but I don't know that it hadn't, you know, to what level it had an effect after that. But if you get it in the eyes of the people who don't ever want to believe the kids who are being harassed, no one wants to believe a teenager out there. But when you can give them concrete evidence that's supported by adults, then it says something, I think.
Yeah. And there's so many things going on all over the United States that are issues everywhere, and a lot of times people think it's just in their community, because they won't necessarily know from the corporate media. And police brutality is certainly one of those issues that's happening all over the country in a really big way and growing, and that people need to know that they're not isolated in what's happening to them. Well, Ted Keelan and Lisa Hensley from Springfield, Illinois. What else would you like to tell us about your community? You were saying that there's really a lot going on there, especially for such a small place. You were describing earlier how it just divided racially just right down the middle. We're talking about Southern Illinois here. I guess a lot of people call that the South. Not that we don't have racism everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, you really have to fight, you know, in the heartland. That's the Midwest. It's a very conservative area, and people are slow to change there. And so it's really the front lines of the battle in terms of just reaching average people and not preaching to the choir and educating middle America about what's happening. And are reading, we have union people who are reading Noam Chomsky books who were, you know, on strike and were in locked out and are doing all this educational things for themselves. And it's just wonderful to see people really starting to come awake and get tuned in and turned on and are listening in middle America is very exciting.
Well, and Noam Chomsky is a professor at in Boston.
MIT.
MIT, who has a very deep analysis of the negative, the patterns of politics and things that go on in the United States and the world. So I say this, I mean, I keep adding this in because it is very hard. There's so many things to talk about, and it's very easy to forget that not everybody knows what we're talking about because right here and now, who knows who's listening? And hopefully people are listening who don't already know all about all these things and are learning more and having their eyes open, and that's what we can do, and we can all be involved in this kind of media. So you have this show, Esoterica. What you're talking about is on the internet and is on a regular radio station. You want to tell us some more about that?
Well, the show itself I started, and then Lisa came on and to kind of play a few of her style of music. It was appropriate because basically I'm playing a lot of experimental stuff on that show. That's hence the name Esoterica, you know, the fringe made for a select few is what the dictionary refers to it. But experimental, unsigned, lo-fi collaboration, the type of thing you generally don't hear on the radio because I guess it's not been processed according to industry specifications for one reason or another. Either it doesn't fit the formula or it doesn't fit the mode of the time that's being put forth, like these boy bands or whatever, like right now, or Mosh, you know, the latest thing. Anytime anybody's experimenting, it's going to be off the wall or it's going to be a little bit different or a combination. And so I wanted to have a show. I knew they wouldn't let me get political on that station. It's FM and they'd rather have music. So I started this to try to play stuff that I didn't think was getting played on the radio. And then now it's evolved to where Lisa does it most of the time. And I do a segment in the middle that I pre-produce of local music. And I put sound bites in between the local music that we've collected of being at the shows, talking to people backstage, stuff like that. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, these guys, these people, they put a lot of work into it, and they're listening to the station now. So when they hear themselves, that's got to be a strengthening, you know. I mean, and also for the other people that hear them. Maybe you'll talk to me next time, or wow, I wondered what those guys sounded like. Or that's why we call it Esoterica, you know. It's not really just meant for a select few, but unfortunately it's not mainstream either, you know. So that's pretty much the long and short of that. And it's there's a stream that runs when our show's at 10 o'clock on Tuesday nights, Central Time, and then there's a stream that runs 24-hour of all the shows on this station. At night it's community, and maybe Lisa could seg into that and she could tell you about the nature of the station, because that's WQNA is very interesting to tell about.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it's an interesting hybrid. It's actually for high school students during the day, and then as evening approaches and on the weekends, there's a variety of community volunteer DJs that come in and play everything from classic country to fringe folk to the kind of music that we play, Latin music, world music, so that there's all this diversity down at the low end of the dial. And for some place like Springfield, where it's all classic rock, country, and oldies is basically all that's on the air there. So it's really exciting. And some of the music we play, we do slip political music in there. For example, I really like DJ Shadow's got a lot of stuff that's political, and I make sure to slip a lot of that in. So we are able to slip some messages in that it's in the music that's appropriate for our show. So just a little less direct than perhaps with the cable access show.
Mm-hmm, great. Do you think you have a lot of listeners? Do you get much feedback?
Yes, I'm surprised. I'm always surprised to hear how many people say they're listening to the show. We always joke about our 12 listeners, but I feel that it's a whole lot more than that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, too, as far as getting us some information out, even though we can't be overtly political. We have an announcements half hour into the show where we talk about all the things that are going on and we tell people. So at least, you know, they come for the candy and the entertainment, and then there's a little announcements blurb, and then we go on about all the different groups having meetings and stuff, you know. So that's, and there's been more festivals happening than ever before in Springfield. I suppose I could keep it brief. There's a friend of mine that does a site called springfieldmusic.com, because all these bands have websites, but they're weird URLs and addresses, you know, that no one can remember. So they're on this list, springfieldmusic.com. You go to the letter, the name of the band, you find the band, it's there, and it's all free. You go right to their site, you know, and that way you hear of a band, you can go find out about them. And when he started it, there were 4 bands that had websites. Now there's hundreds, mm-hmm. just hundreds. Mm-hmm. And they actually pull off festivals of free music, too, in the park. So it's really grown into it. Everything's just bumping into each other, you know.
Well, that's wonderful. That's the good news of what's going on in the world as far as I'm concerned. Do you think you're going to talk about the Rainbow Gathering when you get back?
Oh, definitely. I'll be talking about that on the air. And I also hope to maybe do some sort of video segment, if not out of this one, in the future. I did take a lot of beautiful scenic video coming across the country, which I actually just want to set to music and sort of have it as you travel across and just show the beauty of the nation and how big. We forget. Everyone wants to travel abroad, and we really forget just how much beautiful diversity there is right here in our own country. So
that's really true. I don't usually travel in the United States myself, and I've never been to Idaho. And it surely is gorgeous, and a lot of Idaho's national forest, in fact.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know so much of it was, either.
So maybe we could get some contacts and stuff if you want to give them out. You said some things that repeat how you get heard on the Internet. Well, and if you have any personal email or anything that you want to give out for people to get in touch with you.
We could mention blowingthewhistle.org, which Lisa maintains. It's just simply www.blowingthewhistle.org. And from there, you could probably find everything. But we have a show for our site for Esoterica at springfieldmusic.com/Esoterica, Esoterica.
Okay.
And the Blowing the Whistle email is blowingthewhistle@blowingthewhistle.org.
Lisa Hensley and Ted Keelan and myself, Sue Supriano. And I want to thank you very much for listening. And thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.